This is a podcast about fighting the system and staying rebellious while being incarcerated. The show takes the form of a recorded phone call between myself in Chicago and my twin brother, currently locked up at the Tallahatchie County Correctional Facility in Tutwiler, Mississippi, a private prison operated by the corporation CoreCivic. I am Jason.
And I am Jeremy.
And we are...
Twin Trouble!
All right, welcome back. It's been a long time since we did an episode. Jeremy, how are you doing?
All things considered, I'm still struggling, but staying positive and staying healthy, you know, to the best of our ability. How are you doing?
Doing well here. Quarantining, not leaving my house except for participating in the protests, you know. There's been another seismic shift since last time we did an episode, of course, is the global uprising against racism in the police, which was sparked off by the brutal murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Over the last month, protesters have been consistently been tearing it up in the streets to demand fundamental shifts to the systemic racist capitalist system,
which has immiserated the lives of black folks for far too long.
This is a moment where previously unimaginable things are becoming possible, and this is a time for new ideas and actions to be put forward. Truly, one cannot capture this moment in a single soundbite, and we have a lot of content to get to, so let's get to it.
Okay, so we got a lot to talk about today. A lot has happened in the world since our last show. We're going to be talking about coronavirus in prison. We're going to be talking about government repression of Black Lives Matter and Antifa. We're going to be talking about the exciting new anonymous release of Blue Leaks, classified confidential information. And we have a special guest today with us. Grace is going to be talking about Blue Leaks.
We got Grace Becker, of course, member of the Jeremy Hammond Support Committee and the Twitter handler and all that. How are you doing, Grace?
Hey, I'm doing good. How about y'all?
Oh, we're so good. Do we want to announce the rest?
Yeah, we also have a very other special guest. Today with us, we have Mr. K. Mr. K is a rescued lab rat who came home to live with me forever. yesterday, he's chilling on my lap. He is a Sprague Dolly rat that was bred by Charles River Labs. Charles River Labs is one of the worst of the worst. They're the second largest importer of primates into the United States for vivisection. They import thousands into the United States. And this little dude was bred by this company and used in food deprivation studies. So somebody starved this little guy. And
that's horrible.
Yeah, and I don't know how somebody could do that. I don't know what kind of monster could do that, because literally right now he is curled up against my leg, and I am scratching behind his ear. He's like half falling asleep against me. He's just such a cuddly little dude and so relaxed and so affectionate.
What's the call? Free them all. Free all the labor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got my cat in here with me. He's kind of my bestie. He also kind of looks like a bat.
So we got cats like bats and rats.
Yeah, I have another cat in the room. I have a cat also in the room. She's chilling as well.
I saw some crickets in my cell today. I was like, wow, I've seen it all now. Crickets? Yeah.
First off, I want to start off with a joke for some lightheartedness before we get to the heavy-handed shit. But of course, you've heard about Chaz?
Yeah, in Seattle.
All right. The fact that it was in Seattle leaves us a couple Frasier-related jokes. So, Frasier and Niles are walking down past the autonomous zone the other day, and Frasier looks at a sign and it says, a cab. And Niles is like, ooh, a cabernet sounds lovely right about now. But Chaz, also known as CHOP, the autonomous zone in Seattle, was basically held down a large area where it was basically a police-free zone, including commandeering a police station. What's it called? Seattle People? Something.
Right on.
So, but anyway, it was raided by the cops, and like everyone was violently ripped out, and so it's over with.
So, a couple of friends of mine who are absolutely not leftists whatsoever, they're liberal-ish, but definitely not leftists whatsoever. They live in Seattle, and they decided to go down to Chaz when it was still Chaz, and see what it was all about. They wanted to, you know, kind of see, quote, anarchy in action, and they were very impressed with it. They thought that it was very well organized, you know, very well, quote, run. I'll use that word loosely. Yeah. But they were very impressed with it, which I thought was actually really great. I mean, they said that, you know, at no time they felt like they were in danger. They really enjoyed walking around and seeing the art and community gardens that had sprung up. And I just thought that that was a really awesome thing, that, like, even people that aren't leftists, that really have no idea what sort of anarchy looks like in practice, you know, were able to kind of experience that and see that and kind of see, you know what, this is really cool and I felt really welcome here and, you know, the people treated me well. And I just felt that that was really cool. And reading their perspective on it, you know, it showed what non-anarchists viewed Chaz as.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very inspiring also to hear about it, you know, how people were, like we were talking about, creating a physical manifestation of the type of war that we want to see, you know, one where we solve our own problems instead of relying on police and authorities to dominate, as Trump would say. And, of course, there's a lot of people who wanted to see it fail, ultimately ending in, like, an armed siege.
After it had been dismantled, I think it was the Black Rose Federation did a really good breakdown of some things that had gone really well, some things that didn't go really well, because honestly, you know, it wasn't all sunshine and roses, and I think that it is really productive to look at some things that didn't go really well and see, you know, where the weaknesses were so that, you know, we can build on the movement and, you know, see where there is room for improvement, you know.
Yeah, every experiment we get better at it.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the main things that I remember them mentioning was there seemed to be no really good way for people to, they said it seemed to be mostly lacking in organization, in that there was a General Assembly that sprung up.
Yes.
But that it needed sort of better communication within the General Assembly to solve problems, which I think anybody who's ever been to any sort of anarchist meeting ever can relate to that feeling, that sometimes we can get a little sidetracked. And
I mean, why bring up theory if you don't want to talk about it forever?
Exactly.
Well, I love the endless meetings anyways, but...
Right.
A work in progress anyway. You know, there's no one, you know, has a perfect solution to it, but, you know, as
it unfolds,
we figure it out together, you know.
Right. I don't think that anybody expected it to go perfect, especially how it was born. It was born out of a very violent, very tumultuous situation. There were also some really good critiques in the article about how some people felt that it was sort of eclipsing the Black Lives Matter movement, which I think are valid critiques, you know, and how people were focusing more on the fact that an autonomous zone had been established than the original message of the protests, which were, you know, the voice of the Black community saying, you know, stop killing us.
Fuck the police.
Yeah, fuck the police.
Yeah. I'll definitely be looking up that article, reading for myself, and I'll probably post it on the blog as well for this podcast episode.
Yeah,
please
do. I felt it was really good. I think it had some worthy points.
You know, I wanted to tell you something else.
What?
So yesterday, apparently, a great number of legislators in the Mississippi state capitol were tested positive for coronavirus after having a meeting about whether or not they should be requiring masks in public. And, of course, none of these legislators live in the session were wearing masks at all. And so now the Mississippi legislation is full-on contagion.
Right. And, of course, a lot of them are also trying to blame the protests for the spike in coronavirus infections, and conveniently forgetting that, like, maybe like a month ago, there's all these American flag waving Trumpers out there saying that it's their free speech right to refuse to wear masks and to open the economy because they wanted to get haircuts and go to the bars. Like, and Trump was having these big public rallies against the advice of all the, you know, the CDC and stuff like that. Basically just intentionally bucking the wearing of the mask. Like,
honestly, I think that's going to be Trump's downfall because people know it's that we're living through a plague. Also, I'm not sure if you heard, but president/dictator of Brazil, just Bolsonaro, just caught coronavirus too.
I did see that. Well, there's one we won't miss.
Speaking of Mississippi, that right. state just voted, and the governor signed a law basically saying they're taking down that fucking Confederate flag and within the Mississippi flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the lowering of the flag itself on
Damn.
TV. Yeah.
Nice.
I can't believe it's been up there for so long, but I guess it's kind of important that, you know, that because it flies in the face of what Trump and, you know, the right is trying to rush to defend these statues and monuments to racism and all these Confederate generals and symbols. You know, he, of course, passed that executive order basically trying to criminalize people who are taking down the statues and to punish the cities that are also, you know, on their own volition deciding to take down these symbols as well. So, yeah, the state is calling in the full apparatus of repression to target the Black Lives Matter movement. Trump was calling in the military to work the protests. He was sending the Department of Homeland Security to protect his monuments to racism. Georgia Governor, that piece of shit Kemp, was calling in the National Guard to protect the state buildings so he could free up. So he says the local police, so that he could increase patrols in the neighborhoods. And it's like you're completely missing the point here. We're demanding no police, not more police, no police.
Right. So it's been reported that over 10,000 people have been arrested in this uprising. Some are facing years in jail. Many cases are actually being charged as federal crimes to increase sentences. Some are actually even receiving terrorist charges for as little as breaking a window or setting fire to cop cars. So we are already seeing major repression of this movement. But a lot of what Trump is saying, for example, that Antifa is behind the Black Lives Matter movement, that they are terrorists who hate America, is just pure political huffing and puffing. There isn't actually any substantial bite to this executive order for statues, for example. It is more or less just directs cops to enforce already existing laws which protect these statues. Even though he said people should be getting a year for burning a flag, which has long been constitutionally accepted free speech, or 10 years for taking down a statue, there is no new enforceable law or even a way to identify people as being members of Antifa, which is an idea that not only everyone should get behind because fascists are fascists, but also there is no centralized organization or network that they can place on some domestic terrorist list or prove that an individual is a member of. And although it's very much political posturing to whip up his base, it has given the green light to take to basically brutalize protesters whenever they feel like it, which is a horrid irony because that is the reason why people are out in the streets protesting in the first place.
Right, and they're justifying their police brutality by there's a full-blown propaganda effort by the right to discredit Black Lives Matter by sensationalizing the supposed rise in crime and violence, especially in cities like Atlanta and Chicago, essentially blaming protesters for the deaths of children and to justify their brutality.
Yeah, Chicago has been so corrupt and resistant to any policy change with regard to the defund or abolish the police movement. For example, in Chicago, Police Chief Superintendent Brown said that they were going to preemptively sweep the streets, and especially what they're calling drug corners of teenagers. This comes on the heel of Trump's letter to Governor Pritzker and fake progressive Mayor Lightfoot to restore law and order, a.k.a. martial law, to the city that's plagued with gun violence, as they would say it. In fact, Lightfoot fulfills her commitment to 1,200 more officers on the South and West Side streets to poor and black neighborhoods in order to preemptively arrest teenagers before July 4th. They are hyper-sensationalizing violence in order to fight the Black Lives Movement, which states the police are not necessary for conflict resolution. CPD is bucking the need to understand crime as a result of systemic marginalization and decades of governmental policies which have impoverished the black community. And they are doing so without any mention to addressing the social causes of crime at all. CPD Superintendent Brown slandered the people he intends on arresting as, quote, evil, murderous bastards. The city's solution to the problem of crime is a preemptive sweep of black and brown youth who exist in areas that are labeled as high crime areas and to throw them into Cook County Jail, quote, for at least throughout the weekend, meaning they are knowingly warehousing the youth in an epicenter for a deadly virus, not for actually committing crimes, but for living in areas that they have criminalized. These youth will then be released and take it back to the communities. And it has come out that about 15% of all coronavirus cases in Illinois can be traced back to Cook County Jail.
There, it was, I think, about a week ago, on his official Twitter account,
he posted
about a dozen, quote, wanted posters of the protesters that had been with pictures and everything.
But it was of protesters, individual protesters.
He shared pictures of individual protesters that were wanted for prosecution for removing statues to these fucking racist pieces of shit. And I mean, like, right. that, I mean, everybody knows his base is fucking racists and Nazis. And a lot of the pictures that he shared were of people of color. And
oh yeah, of course.
I mean,
yeah, it's part
like,
of the trend of Trump is inciting violence against, you know, he's in, encouraging police to shoot looters. He's retweeting videos of, you know, people chanting white power and those people holding that assault rifle pointing at the crowds and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, that dog whistle is gone.
Oh yeah, it is not a dog whistle anymore. I mean, it's, you know, people keep saying, oh well, this is a dog whistle, this is a dog whistle. It is not a dog whistle anymore. But I also think it's really important to recognize, like, people are saying, when people see these things, they're saying, oh, welcome to Trump's America. This is just America. Like, this is just America.
Yeah, Confederate flags have been around. Whether or not the fucking state takes them down, it's like, you sure as hell know you're still going to fucking wander around and see these motherfuckers everywhere.
Right. I mean, it's not just Confederate flags. It's not just statues. Racism had, like, this country was built on genocide and slavery. And, I mean, especially as we come up to the 4th of July, you know, Independence Day. Yay. It's when we gained our freedom. No, it's when wealthy white slaveholders, you know, quote, the
Yeah, speaking of symbols of racism, how about the American flag? You know what I mean? How about
right.
a flag burning day, right? Take that
right.
flag down, too.
Right, exactly. Like, we still have, I mean, look at prisons. We still have monuments to slavery all across our fucking country.
A lot of these prisons, especially in Louisiana and Mississippi, were former slave plantations, too, like the famous Angola prison.
Yeah, Angola.
Parchment, I believe.
Yeah, you're actually quite close to Parchment.
Right.
There are so many people that still don't know that the 13th Amendment didn't abolish slavery in prisons.
Yeah,
right.
Check 13.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard from so many people that it's a really good one. If anybody has Netflix or knows somebody that has Netflix or knows of another way to get it, 13 is a documentary.
Yeah, it's also especially sinister when you're talking about forced labor in prisons where we can't organize unions or have access to, like, fair labor laws or health and safety laws. But when you're talking about private prisons like Core Civic and CCA, it's even more sinister. It's like, how is this company, like, profiting off of, you know, forced labor and they're lobbying Congress to keep these laws in place? And I certainly didn't ask to come to a CCA prison. I don't even know why the hell I'm here. Topic, coronavirus in prison. You know, we talked about this at the last episode. You know, we went on Grady County, and basically it's like the worst time to be in prison right now. You know, these prisons are completely unable and unwilling to prevent these mass infections. People are dying, people are getting sick, there's deliberate indifference, criminal negligence. We have no way that we could protect ourselves. We don't have hand sanitizers, we don't have social distancing. And we talked quite a bit about this at the Grady County Jail. Fortunately, I'm not that dumb for now. Not that any jailers, you know, I'd still rather be free, of course. But, yeah, this is basically the worst time to be locked down. Most of the BOP as a whole is still locked down. They're only letting people out of their cells for 15 minutes every 3 days to use the shower or use the phone. They've suspended all visits. There's no programming, which includes RDAP and the programming for the First Step Back, where you can earn up to 10 days off a month. So that's all suspended. Most places don't have recreation, so we can't get, like, sunlight or vitamin D, which, of course, is, you know, what a lot of scientists are saying. It could help the immune system protect against the coronavirus, so we don't have outside rec. So, basically, the pandemic is magnified for people in prison, and a lot of jails, such as the Cook County Jail, is like epidemic hotspots.
Yeah. Well, also tying that back to the whole, you know, prison slavery thing, there were so many prisons that at the beginning switched over to making hand sanitizer.
Oh, yeah.
When hand sanitizer is banned in prisons, both for the alcohol content and the pump itself is, like, the plastic bottle and the pump itself is banned. in prisons.
Right. See, we took this hand sanitizer or something, right?
Yeah, the alcohol content is too high, and the pump is banned. There were prisoners in prisons making hand sanitizer that they then couldn't use themselves, weren't being given masks. There's a huge overcrowding problem. You know, there were states that were very resistant to releasing anybody. Like, I know that New York was one of them. Ohio is another one. And New York and now Ohio prisons are huge hotspots. I haven't looked at the numbers. I can't imagine they've gotten much better. But Ohio...
Oh, yeah, talking about Ohio, the BOP, Elkton, you know, there's been numerous lawsuits, of course, like I think like a dozen or so. But anyways, against Elkton as a federal prison, the courts ordered them to start releasing people because of the high death rates and so forth. You know, they have the National Guard working there, and there's just a lot of horror stories coming out of that prison. But the BOP, talking about prison slavery again, they're still sending people to Unicor. They're still sending people to work in their sweatshops, in this case, making masks, I believe. But they said that people weren't even able to wear masks while they were making them or something like that.
I've just heard so many different horror stories from so many prisons about people not caring about sick, you know, about sick people, about prisoners not being given, you know, any, not even adequate PPE, any PPE whatsoever, you know, about prisoners being told, you know, about phones, to put a sock over the phone, you know, to protect from germs instead of actually being given things to clean. You know, they're being told, put a sock over the phone and, like, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, which is not how this works at all. For anyone out there, there's a great project. It's called COVID-19 Behind Bars. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you should check it out. It's been tracking all of the COVID outbreaks in prison. It's got some great information and some, like, actions that you can take if you check out the tag. Everybody should check it out.
We'll definitely put that link in the description. Yeah.
It's being run by some great people. Everybody should check it out.
One kind of thing I want to bring up is the myth early on that people were saying was that, you know, well, during a pandemic, one of the safest places you could be is a prison. You know, you're isolated from everybody. And that quickly turned out to be not true at all, as we're seeing people behind prison face extraordinarily higher rates of exposure, positive testing. When there is testing, they're definitely under testing all the way around. But one of the beliefs is that, you know, you could stay in your cell and you don't have to interact with everyone. But we also just completely ignore the mass psychological damage that what is really solitary confinement has on a person. Jeremy, you were talking about having 15 minutes every 3 days to go out is unbelievable, a violation
right.
of human rights. And the guards are going out in their daily lives, you know, perhaps facing exposure risk, and they're coming to work and they're interacting with, you know, people inside jails. And, you know, it's likely that the guards are the ones who are bringing in the virus in the first place. But
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Regardless, talking about the jail's ability to safely quarantine people, I would like to hear about your opinion on that, Jeremy, as you were you released a whole number of videos in Grady County over this last month or two, showing some of the conditions going on inside there, where people are triple bunked in dorms of, what, like 30, 40 people. In Cook County, we hear stories about people who are in dorms of over 100 people, you know, and who are in bunk beds who are about 3 feet apart from each other. It's like the idea that the prison's ability to safely quarantine people is just not true at all. What is the quarantine process like, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's right. When we were at Grady County, for example, there is absolutely no way that we could have protected ourselves. There is no social distancing. We use at all times within 6 foot from another prisoner. And basically everybody caught corona. And they were trying to deny that it happened. And they were refusing to test people. And they were basically trying to pass the buck off to the BOP or the U.S. Marshals. And that's why we had to make those video statements. We had to put it out there. I put a series of videos out first about the corona stuff. And then we did another one. I did another one for June 11th, International Day of Action for Anarchist Prisoners. That's kind of cool. But then the whole George Floyd situation, like I said in the video, many of us have experienced brutality and know what it's like.
1 minute remaining.
Many of us experience brutality and know what it's like to be abused by these guards on an everyday basis. And so we did a little protest. We had made little signs and we made a video. It's the first time I've ever been at a place that has the video the video visit feature, and I was like, yeah, that may not ever get another opportunity to do it. So, and everybody was really mad and really upset about what was going on. in the news about the police killing people and getting away with it. And then we were all also really mad about our personal situation here, being unable to protect ourselves against the coronavirus because of just the criminal negligence that Grady County Jail was going on. So, I'm just going to call you all right back. All right?
Yeah, do it up.
Yeah. The guards were particularly brutal and abusive. On two occasions, we saw instances of brutality that in our little pod of 30 people. On one occasion, they had these fire alarms that just go off in the middle of the night all the time, like 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and the alarm would go off maybe 15, 20 minutes, but they had like this huge exhaust fan in the ceiling, and it's just loud as a motherfucker, and it's just blowing cold air over everything, all our blankets and stuff like that are just flying off of us as we're sleeping. Like, it was ridiculous. It was like a hurricane, right? Everybody's, like, cups are spilling off tables and stuff. So, people were hitting the button, telling them to turn it off, turn the fan, turn the thing off. They're trying to say, yeah, we ain't going to do it. Just put a request in, type stuff, right? One person was actually, like, banging on the door and cussing the guard out, right? And so the guard came, he's like, we're coming in there. Take your stuff. We're coming to get you. We're coming to get you right now. Like, you know, it's mad, right? So he's like, fine, fuck it. He went to his bunk, started packing his stuff, right? And then the guards came in like literally like 30 seconds later, right? But here's the thing. They actually went and they just saw the first old man that they saw. Like, they just walked in and there's an old guy just kind of sitting right there standing like confused. And they mistook him for the guy that they thought they were going to lock up. And then they just like walked behind him and just pushed him like really hard towards the door. And he tripped, right? He didn't fall down because they pushed him forward. But it was like, wow, really? They're just going to go in here and just assault an old man like for no reason? Like, and he was the wrong guy. It was the wrong guy and everything. So that was the first occasion, and that reminded me of that the video that was online of those cops who just like pushed the old man, and the guy fell backwards, and it was really terrible what had happened.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then there's another situation where they did a shakedown of the unit. They kicked everybody out and just rustled our stuff up, took extra shirts and stuff like that. This one guy, they took all his commissary, right? And so he was banging on the door saying, you took my commissary, right? So then, for some reason, they were really mad about people kicking the doors, which is kind of a time-honored tradition, you know, like just kicking the door as hard as you can. But they were really pissed about it here at Grady County. And they opened the door and they grabbed him, right? And then we were all watching from the window as they choked him. They did like a rear naked choke, and there was like six cops. And they were just like dragging him, trying to drag him to the ground, right? And he was, you know, he wasn't like resisting, like, you know, he certainly didn't throw any punches. You know what I mean? But he was just like, just kind of struggling as the cops are just choking him, right? And the cops pulled a taser and they're like shining it on him and had like a little laser, like a little red light, like two or three of them like on him as they're like choking him like they're about to zap. And we're all sitting there from the window just unable to help, but we were just banging on the door and screaming at them. And the cops were at that point very conscious of what was going on. They were like, oh man, we're being watched, right? So fortunately the guy was able to stand up on his own, you know, and then they dragged him off and they put him in the hole. But, that of course got the whole unit really riled up. And then like not that long afterwards, like a couple cops came in the unit and they were trying to be all soft. It's like, listen, we know what happened to George Floyd was terrible. You know, I myself have, family members in prison. And like, dude, you're a fucking cop. And he was trying to like calm us down and stuff like that. And, we was wondering like, can we get your names? Can we get the names? He's like, oh, I can't give you the names of the guys who were the guards who were. It was really horrible, actually, and it happened like right in the middle of this whole George Floyd uprising. And so we just seen it for ourselves, and then that's when we made the second video. Although we didn't mention it in the video itself, but it's just the type of stuff that unfortunately happens in these jails and prisons all the time, and usually just unaccounted for. They just slips through the cracks, and they just get away with it.
it's the whole thing is like, you know, the, all the times we see the police brutalizing people, you know, but I'll think of all the times we don't see it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think people understand just what exactly happens in prisons on a day-to-day basis.
Well, the whole thing is they think of us as less than human beings, and they think that our lives don't mean anything, and that they could just get away with assaulting us and brutalizing us with impunity. And it's the same thing that happens in the streets with the police officers, and that's why this uprising has to happen. Fortunately, they finally are starting to move people out of Grady County Jail. Yeah, that was a real dump. But so going along with the corona transfer stuff, there's 7,000 people or so in the U.S. Marshals custody who are already sentenced inmates who are awaiting transfer to a BOP prison. And we've been, because of this lockdown stuff, we've been waiting, you know, for months at Grady County Jail for them to start calling names, but they haven't been doing it. They finally did it, but I didn't go where I expected it to be going.
Transferred from Grady County to Tallahassee County Correctional in the middle of fucking nowhere, unincorporated land near Tutler, Mississippi. He's going to tell you about being transferred after months of being in limbo. But since this is the first time Jeremy has been to a core civic jail, and since they're the second biggest private prison corporation in the country, I figured it was worth doing a little bit of research into the recent history of core civic, which, until the Trump era, was known as the Corrections Corporation of America. CCA proudly states it is the world's first modern private for-profit prison. Perhaps they could be given credit for inaugurating in the prison industrial complex itself. In 1984, they opened their first jail, which was a motel modified to house immigrant detainees. They also can be given credit for opening the first private juvenile detention center. They capitalized heavy from the racist tough on crime and war on drugs policies in which they themselves are co-architects. Of course, CoreCivic is a member and financial backer of the American Legislation Exchange Council, or ALEC, who literally draft legislation for Congress people at the state and federal level on behalf of corporations. Successfully pushed laws such as mandatory minimums, three strikes, truth in sentencing, which greatly exploded the prison population and rewarded CoreCivic with more contracts. The reasoning behind why it's problematic for prisons to be ran privately are obvious. Cutting corners and providing less quality of life for prisoners in order to squeeze out profit is a calculus of suffering. But perhaps the most egregious practice of CoreCivic is their long exploit of the 13th Amendment loophole, which allows the criminalized to be unpaid for prison labor, specifically with reference to Unicor, which is what's called a government corporation. Amidst all the scandals, corruption, even an FBI investigation, in 2016, Attorney General Sally Yates wrote a memo announcing that the BOP and Department of Homeland Security would begin to phase out contracts with for-profit prisons, because, according to their own analysis, the facilities are both less safe and less effective at providing correctional services. This was in August. 3 months later, in October, Corrections Corporation of America rebranded and changed its name to CoreCivic to avoid their stained reputation and horrid history. Then Trump won the Electoral College in November, and immediately CoreCivic stock started soaring again. Although the criminalization of immigrants expanded rapidly under Bush with the establishment of ICE and during the Obama administration as well, Trump's platform of law and order, particularly with his xenophobic war on immigrants, is a clear sign that public opinion didn't matter and that there was still money to be made. CoreCivic contributed financially to the Trump campaign and was rewarded greatly from his policies, which expanded the immigrants' prison systems. And 4 months into Trump's occupation of the White House, Jeff Sessions rescinded the previous administration's plan to end private prisons, and the contracts with CCA started coming in again. These days, the family separation and detention practiced by profiteers, which include CoreCivic, has become so reviled by the public that CoreCivic had to form a PR advocacy group to fix their image at prison profiteering, partnering with other private prison groups like GEO and Management and Training Corporation to form what they call the Day One Alliance. Recently, they've been writing hack slander pieces against the abolitionist movement, defending ICE agents and COs at their facilities as essential workers and heroes instead of being guards of negligent death camps.
So basically, fuck CCA. But But seriously, though.
So, Jeremy, tell us how you escaped from Grady County Jail.
So, what first happened is they called us at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and they put us in a bullpen for like 7 hours, right?
What?
This is what they do. You know, just benches. This is actually regular, right? Then they put the chains on, right? And they put the chains on really tight. And, they gave us a bologna sandwich, too, at 1 o'clock. Yeah.
Got it.
Was the first. That was the last we were going to eat for a very long time. So then they brought us downstairs to the garage, right? And then they opened the door, right? And remember, that's the first time I had, like, fresh air. And it wasn't quite sunlight. It was, like, 6. It was, like, dawning, right? But sun and fresh air for a long time, right? And they had the bus out there. And so they started calling us one by one. And then we'd have to walk. You know, we're chained to the bus, right? So when they called my name, I started walking. But I was like, fuck it, I'm going to walk a little slow. Right? Not like crazy slow, but first, you can't walk that fast anyways with those ankle chains on, right? Otherwise, they like pull on your Achilles tendon and it just really hurts. But, dude, the cop fucking saw it, right? And he's like, dude, get over here, right? And I'm like, do what, right? So without any warning whatsoever, he's like, oh, let me play with the cuffs for a second, right? He puts the black box on, right? And I think we talked about the black box before in like one of the...
Yeah, the first episode.
Right, it's a box that prevents you from being able to twist the cuffs. And then the thing about that is, it's you know, I've been black boxed basically every time I've been transferred, right? But I guess they didn't really know or care about it this time, right? But this time he was using it as like a means of punishing me for walking slowly, which is also another, like, you know, they're not supposed to do that. It's not a tool to like make you uncomfortable to punish people who are like mouthing off or walking slowly, right? And then he tightens my cuffs like a motherfucker, like really bad, right? And so that was, you know, I didn't really, I was like, man, come on, this is way too tight. He's like, yeah, tell it to the marshals. Tell it to the marshals when you get to the plane. I'm like, and, you know, they ain't going to do nothing. They ain't going to uncuff you and loosen your cuffs when you're on the tarmac, you know, boarding the plane, right? So then they put us in the bus. And the bus is one of these Grady County buses to where there's no windows that you can see out of, except at the very top there's, like, these horizontal slits that you can't really see out of. You could see, like, upwards. Like, you could see, like, the tops of trees maybe, right? And so that's one of my favorite things about being transported is being able to, like, you know, see the outside world, right? You know, I was able to see the jail as we were leaving, which is kind of cool. It was like, bye, jail. And then saw this huge fucking Amazon fucking warehouse thing. It was just huge. It was, like, several blocks, right? And then we got to the airport, and I was able to see the Oklahoma City jail, right, the prison, right, the other prison, right? Like, hi, jail. I wish I was there instead of Grady County Jail. You know, that's the FTC, Oklahoma, where we usually go. So then we got on the plane. None of us had any idea where we were going. I mean, I knew ultimately I was going back to FCI Memphis, but most everybody else had no idea what was going on, right? So, you know, they don't tell you where you're going immediately either. So we're on the plane, looking out the window, and I eventually see the Mississippi River, and I see downtown Memphis. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to prison, right? So we land in the airport. Another thing about the airport is it's huge. It's got a... Hold on, one second. Can I get that in writing? Can I get that in writing? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I put it a request in, you know. All right. Thank you. That's them telling me that the sick call request to get tested for corona was denied, or they're not going to do it unless I have symptoms or whatever the fuck. I'll get back to that in a second. I'm going to talk to the CCA stuff. Okay. Anyways... So I'm looking at the airport, and another thing about the Memphis airport is that there's a huge FedEx, like, warehouse. There's, like, 100 FedEx planes. It's just half the airport of Memphis is, like, a FedEx distribution center. So we got the Amazon distro, we got the jail, big jail, and we got this FedEx distro, right? But they take everybody off the plane, and we got on a bus, but we're not going to FCI Memphis. They're like, oh, yeah, you guys are going to Mississippi. I'm like, Mississippi? The fuck? And then people are talking. I was like, well, there's some things about the BOP is putting people in these quarantine sites. There's Yazoo City, Oklahoma City, and Terminal Island. As people who are entering the BOP are supposed to be going to these quarantine sites first, right? So we're thinking maybe we're going to Yazoo City first to quarantine and then going to be sent to our place, right? Now we ended up going to Tallahatchie County Correctional Facility, which is owned by CCA or Core Civic, right? And so we're driving in, and it's just nothing but corn for like 4 hours, right? And this rickety bus. And then, you know, there's no restraints or seatbelts on this bus either. So, you know, every little stop, like, and bump in the road, and there's some rickety roads, too. You know, again, cornfields, Mississippi. So we're just bumping up and down. Like, my cuffs are hurting like a motherfucker, right? They abruptly break one time, and a bunch of people fall off the chairs. And it hurt like a motherfucker.
Man.
So, yeah, it was terrible. And that whole thing took like 4 hours. The plane was a couple hours. Then eventually, we're seeing nothing but corn. And then there's this huge-ass fucking jail. Like a huge, huge jail. It's as far as I can see. It's like, wow, this thing is giant, right? There's like 2,000 people here. So we pull in. And I never met a jail I liked. But I have to say, most people are pretty happy to be here as opposed to Grady County Jail. Because, you know, it's, let's say the Grady County is like the low bar. You know what I mean? The lowest possible standards, right? So here we at least, they don't give us fruits, but there are some vegetables on the trays. You know, it's not as crowded. They wash clothes more regularly. Remember, Grady County gives you one set of clothes a week. But they say we're quarantine status and we're in a unit just with us. And we don't get rec. There's no library. There's no religious services. The fire alarm also goes off here randomly all night. It leaks. The ceiling leaks when it rains. And so, you know, it's just another jail. But it is better than Grady County, though. Not that I have anything good to say about CCA in general. You know, actually, CCA has, a lot of people have a pretty positive rep for CCA because they say it's turned off. They say that, like, the guards really don't give a fuck about anything that goes on here because they're, like, basically minimum wage paid employees and they're not really trying to police you. And my experience so far is they're not, like, abusive like they are at Grady County Jail, for example. But it's still the same thing, though. You know, every time we're being transferred from one jail to another, you know, we had to give away all our commissary that we had collected. You know, the money doesn't follow us automatically. That's on our books or our phone, so we got to start all over from scratch. It's been 2 weeks. We still haven't gotten commissary here yet. You know, and they say when we leave here to go wherever we're going next, you know, we're not going to be able to take anything with us either. Apparently our next destination is Yazoo City, not too far from here either. So it's like, wow, I went from Alexandria to Northern Neck Regional Jail in Virginia to Grady County to here, CCA, and next we're going to Yazoo City. Like, we're just being bounced around, like, just pointlessly. Like, and is this diesel therapy? And when are we going to be able to get to where we're going? As for me and several other people who are already near the end of their bid, we're at the point where we could receive halfway house and home confinement immediately. Like, I'm something like 11 months to the door, to my max date right now. And when you're under 12 months, you're eligible for halfway house and home confinement. So I could basically, but they say that you have to be in BOP custody, and because they don't do halfway house here, that's up to the BOP. You're in the marshal's custody, and they don't do halfway house. It's like, listen, release me. There's no point continuing to transfer me or quarantine me or anything, right? Like, just exposing me to coronavirus. It's just a hassle, you know?
Pretty unbelievable. Being bounced around is just impossible to kind of keep track of where you're going. I'm just figuring out the phone system is kind of fucked up and wanky because it's a private prison.
Yeah, from a support standpoint, that's actually been one of the most interesting things about your whole, you know, move from here to here to here to here to here, is that across the state and county jail system, they don't have a uniform way of doing commissary, phone, things like that. Every different county prison has their own system. Some use JPay, some use, you know, Tiger Commissary for email, you know, there's Smart Jail Mail, there's this, you know, all these different systems. So, you know, not knowing how long you're going to be in one place for any given period of time has made it, you know, very interesting to try to, you know, get you, you know, the proper amount of, you know, money to last you.
Different rules for books and mail as well.
Yeah, different rules for books and mail, you know, and then those rules can magically change at any given time based on, you know, what they feel like. You know, it's been...
It's like doing jail support basically makes you a master at navigating labyrinths.
It's difficult to even just maintain a relationship with a person who's behind bars.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They
really do it on purpose, but it's also just they just want to just be making money, so they'll just go to the lowest bidder for all these phone services, and, you know, the services suck, they're expensive, the fees are enormous, and they're just making fucking tons of money on it. I mean,
yeah,
this is
the
CCA way.
Yeah, well, it's not even at CCA. At some county systems, put $10
on a phone account, there's a $3 surcharge. It's like, really? Yeah, the surcharges on a lot of the accounts are a lot of the, you know, most of the companies, all of the companies that I have encountered charge surcharges.
Because it's like, yeah, it's like a monopoly. It's like, well, you either want to talk to them or you don't. And if you don't pay the surcharges, well, I guess you just can't talk to your person.
Yeah. And, you know, these, you know, think about, you know, the single parents that are just trying to, you know, keep in touch with, you know, their husband or their spouse in prison. They're trying to, you know, be able to, you know, keep their kids in touch with their parent that's in prison, the grandparents that are raising the kids because the parent is in prison. I mean, some of these people aren't going to be able to afford this. I mean, sending a picture costs dollars.
Yeah, especially since their person that, you know, that's behind bars that they're supporting is probably either a family member or a close friend, someone who may be like, you may have like financial lives together. You know, if your significant other is, and if you have kids, for example, it means you have to handle the financial burden of not just taking care of your own family, but your loved one as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially if it's an older relative taking care of children because, you know, it was a single parent taking care of the children, and then the single parent, because so much of survival is criminalized, you know, and then the single parent went to prison, you know, so the older relative is now caring for the children. They may already be on a fixed income because they're retired, or, and especially when you can't do things, there are rules, like you can't print multiple pictures on one piece of paper. Like you have to send a 4x6 glossy photo on photo paper. Like you can't print 4 photos on one piece of paper from your printer and mail it with your letter. That is forbidden.
Yeah. And CC in particular, as far as the profit motive, as far as areas like medical, for example, the whole thing is about profit and reducing the amount of services they give to people. So, and especially for us, we're in transit, so they're not trying to give us nothing. They say you got to be here for a whole year before they even do a dental cleaning, for example. There's no programs, you know, there's no education, there's no and not even religious services now because of the coronavirus. They just shut all that stuff down, so there's no way to even mix with other units. But CCA, for example, gets like a lot of contracts with like ICE or like a lot of people in the feds who have illegal reentry charges end up going to a private jail like CCA or GEO, where basically because they know they don't want to waste a whole lot of money, is how they see it, on people who aren't even citizens. The medical is pretty bad here too. Like, for example, like when I got here, I showed them the bruises I had on my cuffs, which lasted like a whole week. My shit started turning yellow and green and stuff like that. I was like, I saw the whole course, 3 different nurses, right? And I was like, listen, please put it in writing that I have these bruises. I'm requesting that you take pictures of this so you can send to my people so we could document the fact that they did this. We can't let them get away with this. Like, oh, yeah, we'll do it. Yeah. Nothing. Now the bruises are gone. It's been like a week and a half. I said, okay, so you were on quarantine status, right? He's like, yeah. So I'm requesting, I put it in writing that you test me for the coronavirus, that you give me the antibody test because I believe I caught coronavirus at Grady County about 2 months ago. They're like, oh, yeah, well, we don't really do the coronavirus here. It's like, well, okay, what if I want to pay for it myself? What if I want to pay for it? Like, first off, I saw it on the news just yesterday that Mississippi is offering, like, free corona tests. Like, oh, yeah, well, we really don't do that here, right? So 3 times did that. I put it in writing. They're like, he's tried to spin me just verbally, but they're like, nah, I need a written response. And they say we're quarantined here, which means we're not allowed to go anywhere outside the unit for anything. Not that there's anything to do outside the unit anyway, because they closed education and religious services. You know, one of us actually just got sick, and they pulled him out. It's been 3 days, and they said he's not going back. They said that we can't tell you what he has or doesn't have, but the coronavirus test takes 3 days to get back, so you guys figure it out, right? He's like, but we are extending your quarantine for 2 weeks. And we're like, dude, are you fucking serious? Like, and they just, you know, they didn't do nothing to his belly. You know, it's basically all of us, we've been, again, exposed to corona. You know, there's no escaping it. And then they're saying, well, we don't even really have to give you guys masks. You know, if we have some extra, you know, we will give you guys some. And they did give us, like, a mask. Actually, they gave us 2 masks. So it's like, Are you serious? Like, this quarantine, they're like, oh, well, we'll see. You guys still might be able to get wrecked, though. I know you guys haven't gotten wrecked since you've been here, right? And for me, that's, I've probably had about 8 hours of sunlight in the past, like, 9 months or so since I left FCI Memphis. And I had, like, maybe 8 hours of outside wreck when I was at Alexandria, and that was it. That was it the whole time. And like I said earlier, like, the vitamin D and the sunlight is natural ways to help build your immune system to protect against coronavirus.
Yeah, I mean, even if the whole vitamin D and coronavirus thing is, you know, not an actual thing, like, your body needs vitamin D. And the weaker your body is, the more likely you are to get sick. I mean, that's just a fact.
It's kind of what coronavirus is fucking doing. It's like, it's just making, you know, more vulnerable situations extra motherfucking precarious.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Health system was already fucking bad. Well, and especially in prisons, it's like, well, now fucking, like, we're hearing in Cook County Jail, it's like there's nurses, the medical, it's all shut down. No one's getting nothing. Medicine is that they've needed for any sort of ailment you could imagine. It's just there's people are just, like, not getting access to it. Or if it's like, if they do, it's after filing numerous grievances and months later.
Were there co-pays at Grady to see medical? Because I know that at a lot of prisons...
An $8 co-pay.
What?
$8.
Yeah,
$8 is the C-stick call, right? And,
yeah, and
basically all they're doing is they're just giving you aspirin.
Yeah, while prisoners make literally pennies per hour at their quote-unquote job.
A lot of people didn't want a C-stick call because they didn't want to waste the $8 because they knew that they weren't going to do anything for you anyway if you were sick. So they're like,
yeah,
man, anyways, I ain't going to see medical because it's cost too much. I ain't going to waste my family's money.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that prisons charge incarcerated people to see medical.
Mm-hmm. It just makes the system extra difficult to navigate, the whole web of prison system within the BOP, the lockdown, the marshals, these private prisons just make the whole situation extra fucking difficult. And, for example, for your situation, being so close to the edge, eligible for halfway house, is just, you know, what can we say about this fucking prison system except that they just don't care about inmates and they're just completely dropping the ball in their ability to take basic care of the health of people.
And for all the talk of releasing people for coronavirus, they're actively opposed it every single time.
They try
to find reasons to.
They do not care. Marius Mason, a long-term anarchist prisoner, applied for compassionate release. He is over 50 years old, has served over half of his sentence, is in FBI Danbury in Connecticut.
You're talking about Marius?
Marius Mason?
Yeah.
And
he was denied, yeah.
Yeah, he was denied, and in the order denying his compassionate release, the judge basically wrote, oh, well, only one person at FBI Danbury has died, so it's not that bad.
Only one person died.
That was the exact word. Those were the exact words. Only one inmate has died.
And I believe Marius also caught corona as well, right?
That's right.
He has underlying health conditions, which most prisoners do, from being kept in cages, not being given exercise, not being given nutritional food, not being given health care for years and years and years. I mean, most prisoners are going to have some sort of underlying health condition.
Mm-hmm. You brought up a point about CCA and ICE, and CCA was actually just in the news again recently due to the coronavirus stuff. ICE is not deporting a lot of people to Mexico and South Central America, coronavirus, right? And so all the people who are in ICE detention centers, including CCA and GEO and a few others, are just here, just doing dead time, just waiting, right? And it's been months, and with no path forward for the foreseeable future, and catching coronavirus in these raggedy-ass detention centers run by CCA. For example, there's an individual here in my pod here. He completed his federal sentence just last week, but he has an ICE detainer, and he's just awaiting deportation now. So now he's just, like, waiting for them to just go about supporting them, but that's not happening anytime soon. So, again, just free time. But not free to CCA. They're making lots of money, though. Still making money.
It's the idea of
sending someone to prison only with the guarantee of deporting them afterwards just seems so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. One of the largest federal crimes is illegal reentry. That's no other crime other than returning to the United States is a federal crime that you could actually do years for. People are doing years for that. And then eventually they'll deport them when they're done getting everything that they wanted out of them.
One of the really interesting things that was uncovered in Blue Leaf, which was this really cool drop that just happened, was that police departments were saying to not actually release prisoners because of COVID, because you never know who might have been radicalized in prison. Ah, they might not have been radical when they went in, but they might be radical now. Ah! And, you know, so to specifically not release prisoners because of COVID, because, you know, you never know who might become the next terrorist. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, maybe if prisoners weren't put in solitary and tortured and dehumanized on a daily basis, maybe they wouldn't come out radicalized. Just a thought.
That is sinister. That is sinister that they would prefer that we die in jail and prison because they can't protect us and they don't want to release us, so they'd rather that we die. But that is good that that information had come out, and that brings us to our next topic, the Blue Leaks release of information. Now, there's an epic hack, epic leak, 269 gigabytes, all police info, all their intel. Anonymous is back in the game. I'm very excited. I was very inspired. Congratulations.
Thank you. I am actually on the DDoS team, and this was just for full disclosure. I am on the DDoS team. I am married to one of the co-founders of DDoS, and best. Full disclosure right there. So,
wait, who's holding the rat, though?
I am. The rat is currently, I have my legs kind of, I'm sitting kind of cross-legged, and so I have this little triangle right in the middle, and he is literally just curled up in the middle of my legs.
Wait, and doesn't have a rat?
No, so we have two rats. Their names are Puka and Kea. Kea is the snuggler. Puka is not aggressive, but he has just made it very clear that he is not ready. Or he's not ready to be handled yet, which is fine. Like I said at the beginning, they were both lab rats that were used in food deprivation experiments. So we don't know what kind of trauma they went through at the lab. So we're just giving Puka a little bit more time just to warm up to us.
Free them all.
Free them all. Empty all the cages.
Literally can't say that enough. Free them all.
Yeah.
So about these Blue Leaks.
Yeah. So, yeah, Anonymous just hacked the pigs in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. The hacktivist collective distributed denial of secrets released Blue Leaks on Juneteenth, a holiday which celebrates the date where the last captives in the U.S. slave state found out about their emancipation. The leak contains almost 300 gigabytes of data, which includes a massive trove of emails and internal memos from hundreds of law enforcement agencies. It's so huge that we'll probably be spending months, if not years, poring over this and analyzing the broad strokes, which the underlying attitudes and rhetoric of police discourse over many years, but also details on police training, tactics, and politics. Numerous efforts are being made to take this information down. As always, we're doing our best to maintain security and are always on guard against potential repression. Multiple mirrors, for example, have already been reportedly removed, and of course, Twitter permanently banned the DDoS account and are also actively taking down posts about Blue Leaks, including screenshots and...
Yeah, the Twitter response has actually been extremely heavy-handed. I'm actually locked out of my account for tweeting a screenshot from one of the documents in the leak. They actually marked as unsafe
a website that was not the DDoS secret website. It was misspelled. It had two S's in it instead of one. Didn't go anywhere. It was a domain that was not registered. And Twitter blocked it as possibly being unsafe just because it was too close to the actual DDoS secrets website. They have marked as unsafe articles talking about their censorship, like news articles talking about their censorship. When you try to click on them, a little pop-up will come up saying that this link has been marked as unsafe, that it might infect your computer with malware or might steal your password. Again, these are news articles literally talking about Twitter's censorship. It's Going Down News was locked out of their account and had to remove three tweets, one of which was actually related to BlueLeaks. The other two, one of them was a screenshot from the New Jersey DHS website. Again, all public information. The other one was actually some FOIA documents. Again, all public information. So Twitter has come down extremely heavy-handed on BlueLeaks. People have been suspended for tweeting screenshots from the leak, for just tweeting links to the DDoS website. I mean, it's just been, my wife and Beth was locked out of their account for tweeting about me being suspended. So Twitter has come down extremely heavy-handed on BlueLeaks.
I want to ask about the challenges of making sure this information continues to be available. I know this has been difficult because that's a massive amount of data.
Yeah, it is a massive amount of data. One of the main problems that we had in the first little bit was server getting slow, especially with the response by Twitter. I don't think Twitter quite understands what happens when you tell hackers they can't have something. So it was kind of a Streisand effect. There was 10,000 times more interest, like literally 10,000 times more interest than what was expected. So the servers got really slow. If anybody wants to donate money to help keep servers up and running, that would be super awesome.
And also now German authorities seized the primary public download server for BlueLeaks. Now, we always knew that there was going to be some blowback from the pigs, but we just got to make sure that BlueLeaks stays available.
But, of course, that can't possibly stop people from being able to access that anyways. You know, it's the Streisand effect. The more they try to shield people from being able to see it, like, the more people are going to wonder, is like, maybe there's something in this. Maybe there's something to this. And, of course, there is.
There has already been numerous things discovered in there that are definitely in the public interest. Police departments being warned that Antifa are going to kill you with bombs and
just unsubstantiated, non-specific fear-mongering. All it does is basically just create an atmosphere where police just view everyone they're looking at as potential, as more of a target.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. And, I mean, with intel like that, I mean, it's not that police need a reason to hurt protesters, but I mean, it just ties into it. It creates more of that culture of fear where you have Trump talking about, you know, anarchists and looters and we're going to shoot them on, you know, I won't be gentle. And then we have police departments getting intel that everybody is going to be killed with bombs. And then, you know, you wonder why we have protesters who are kneeling in the streets and being met with, like, tear gas and rubber bullets. And we have reporters getting their eyes literally shot out.
It's so preposterous, thinking of, for example, Trump calling the elderly gentleman who was pushed by the police, calling him Antifa provocateur. It just goes and reinforces the whole Antifa terrorists. But then if you just examine it, like, you can see that clearly in that case, and like all these examples of the feds looking at people's social media profiles and reporting to local police and warning them about these preposterous Antifa plots.
Well, but it's not even just protesters that are being marked as dangerous. In one of the documents in Blue Leaks, they're talking about, quote, anarchist extremists, and listed under anarchist extremists are lawyers. And these documents don't just show that they're targeting, you know, protesters. They're listing as extremists lawyers and medics, and they even say, like, the lawyers, some, you know, the document says that the lawyers might wear bright neon green hats, which is obviously a reference to the National Lawyers Guild.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
And yet they are being listed on a document directly tied to, quote, anarchists and Antifa extremists.
It's to undermine our cause and to discredit people, and also to use the full weight of the law enforcement's abilities under, like, counterterrorism efforts to deny people their basic rights to lawyers and medics. And we understand that Trump was talking about adding them to domestic terrorists. I think that there wasn't actually, like, a domestic terrorist, like, list per se, but isn't there, like, something like a million American citizens who are on, like, the terrorist watch list, and if they could just use somebody's social media posts to have that added to somebody's record, you know, the NCIC lookup, you know, when you look it up, it'll any time a police pulls you over, runs your name, or even if, like, a criminal background check for, like, employers and landlords would see that you're listed as a terrorist. And there's no real procedure for even being aware of that or even challenging or getting that removed either.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, social media these days, there's one case in Philadelphia during the recent protests where a person was caught in pictures allegedly setting fire to an empty cop car, and they were arrested. And when the indictment was released, the feds went through how they tracked this person down.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was just wild. Like, they subpoenaed Etsy, and for, like, because the person was wearing the shirt that they found on Etsy. And, like, so they subpoenaed.
Really?
Yeah, they're deep diving that shit.
Yeah, they subpoenaed the Etsy shipping records from the store that they found it in, and, like, they searched Instagram for photos from that particular day. Like, we can't convict killer cops, but by God, we can fucking subpoena Etsy.
Damn, dude.
Now, it should be said that Antifa has never been responsible for killing anybody, but as far as burning cop cars, I'm not shedding any tears. As a matter of fact, the flames, they warm my heart. They warm my heart.
No, absolutely. Like, no fucking tears for fucking burning cop cars. Absolutely. But, I mean, it just goes to show, like, how far the feds will go to arrest and to suppress the movement.
I mean, it's been reported that over 10,000 people have been arrested in this most recent uprising, and including many people who are facing terrorist charges, even just for as little as breaking a window or burning said cop car.
Which is why it's important that folks support those who have been arrested, and not just some of the folks arrested either, for that matter. I don't think it's helpful at all to try to separate people between nonviolent or violent so-called arrests. I think they all need to be freed, and they all need full court support and jail support. And we support people who are out there in the streets using whatever means they feel is necessary to stop this, to end police brutality, to abolish the police and free all the prisoners. And as far as this hacking Anonymous back in the game, is another tool in our arsenal in which we could dismantle and expose the police for who they are, for violating our rights, for brutality, for and all this. So that's why I want to hear. I want to hear more about the stuff that came out in these leaks. You said that I believe there's something about police finding legal loopholes to justify their brutality.
Yeah, that was actually the thing that I got locked out of my account for tweeting about. There's one document in the leak that is basically, it's a class taught by this lawyer. He goes around to police departments and teaches cops how to use just enough police brutality to be effective, but not enough police brutality to get sued. The document opens by glorifying, lionizing the detective who basically invented stop and frisk. They have his picture. It's on one whole page, blown up nice and big. And then on the next page, it actually shows the police report of the infamous stop that he made that was the foundation for stop and frisk. And then it goes through this whole list of all of these cases that have been used to decide what constitutes excessive force, and, you know, how, basically has laid the ground rules of how courts decide what is excessive force. And it points out in these different cases, as the document goes further and further and further, it starts with the foundations of the case, like, okay, this was the first case that the Supreme Court heard that, you know, laid the foundations of, you know, it talks about this three-pronged approach that the courts look at. And then where it gets really interesting is it starts to look at some more recent cases. One of them involves a pregnant Black woman who was pulled over for going, I believe it was 32 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. It was, you know, she was speeding very, very slightly. When she was pulled over, she refused to sign her ticket. She was 7 months pregnant at the time. When the cop attempted to remove her from her car to arrest her for not signing her ticket, she held on to the steering wheel and she stiffened her body. So the cops decided she was resisting arrest. Mm. And they tased her 3 times. A 7-month pregnant woman tased her 3 times. They tased her in the thigh, the shoulder, and the neck.
That ain't right.
And what this document does is it looks at this case specifically and it says, okay, where did these cops go wrong? And what the conclusion is that they didn't go wrong in tasing her for literally just not getting out of her car for, you know, going 32 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour speed zone. What they conclude was wrong with her case is that they didn't give her enough time between tasings. When they talk about her little section, it actually includes a picture of this, you know, Black woman holding her baby, and the baby is smiling and laughing, and the caption of the picture is, why is this baby laughing, ... all the way to the bank? Yes. Her case was ruled that the cops had used excessive force by not giving her enough time between tasings to comply. Yes.
Again, showing the concerns about the money and getting caught and not the harm that they caused.
And there was another page in this document, was a whole page, and it was entitled, When Does Force Look Pretty? Said it real big across the top, When Does Force Look Pretty? And on the page, it had multiple pictures of cops beating people, including on the bottom of the page, it also had pictures of cops murdering Eric Garner.
What?
Yes.
So apparently that's when force looks pretty.
Jesus fucking Christ. Anyway.
And these are the type of things, this is how they feel. This is the type of what they talk to each other about when they think that nobody is listening.
Yeah, and I mean, the horror is not, the horror is that all, this is legal. This is what goes on every day. You know, it's yes, you know, what we see is horrible, yes, but there is so much that we don't see that is just as horrific. You know, the way that police departments are trained, the way that they speak with each other, you know, when they think that no one is listening, or that when they think that what they say isn't going to be heard by anybody else but other cops. And that's why things like Blue Leaks are so important, because it just exposes the culture
right.
of policing and shows just how toxic and racist and corrupt it is. And I don't understand how anybody can look at something like, you know, like, I just don't understand how people can look at something like Blue Leaks, look at it as a whole, and think that the institution of policing is something that can be reformed.
A lot of it just confirms what people who have already been exposed to the system, what we already know about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I also just want to add that we really need to be careful with cities that claim they are abolishing the police or defunding the police. That's happened a couple times in cities around the country. And basically what has just happened, a lot of people have been using Camden, New Jersey, as an example of a city that has abolished the police. They got rid of their police force, when what actually happened is they didn't. They got rid of the Camden City Police, but they then put Camden under county police jurisdiction and ramped up surveillance incredibly. They ramped up surveillance. They started it was not good. It was not good. It was not good for the city. It was not good for pretty much anything. In New York, from what I've been hearing, I haven't really read many super in-depth articles about it, but from what I'm hearing, when they said that they defunded the police by $1 billion, some people are saying that that money isn't really being redirected to things like education or community support programs, which is what activists want and where it should be going, but they're basically just shuffling it around to different departments so that it doesn't look like it's going to the police, but it really is. So we really need to keep holding people accountable. We can't just say, oh, look, Minneapolis has decided to, you know, disband their police department. Great. You know, we really, really need to keep up with, you know, what is happening instead, and keep holding, you know, people accountable for what is then put in place, because the solutions are not just to disband the current police department and put another police department in place. You know, that's not what will help. You know, we need to defund the police, put the money instead towards programs that will support the community, not just shuffle around numbers so that, you know, it looks like it's going towards something else, but it's really actually still just going straight to the cops.
Right.
I like how they ran the mayor of Minneapolis out of the rally, like after he tried to be all buddy-buddy with them.
That's an epic video. It's an epic
He's like,
video.
Oh, are you not support of all the police? Get your ass out of here. Yeah.
A walk of shame, yeah.
One thing I liked about this leak, from what I've read, is that, for one, they've carefully pruned the data dump
yeah.
for any information on, say, criminal suspects, but that they did not redact any information regarding private information of any police officers. So we know their names. We know their addresses. We know your bank routing information, motherfucker. Right.
Yes, that is correct. It was a choice that was made, that we were not going to redact any information on police officers. We did try to redact as much information on, because there was some information in the leak about programs for things like abuse victims, you know, survivors, domestic violence programs, things like that, that, you know, we did try to redact and to take out of the leak.
Excellent work. I read about 50 gigs of information was redacted from this leak for that reason, to protect it.
Yeah, about 50 to 100, yes.
Oh, shit.
We did attempt to take out, you know, any information that may have stopped a survivor, an abuse victim, anything like that.
But there's still a lot of work to be done as far as pouring through this information and looking at the documents. And as far as the Lulz lizards out there and the doctors, right, there's still plenty of info out there that, you know, you need to cross-check those names, people. Cross-check those names.
And one of the cool things that has come about because of Blue Leaks is they're actually looking to get rid of one of the fusion centers in the leak, specifically because of Blue Leaks. So don't ever doubt that something like Blue Leaks can't enact real-world change.
That's right. And what do you think this means for Anonymous? You know, I know that this has been a major victory here. And it's good to see folks being involved in, you know, relevant uprising of our time. It's our moment. Do you think this is like a new trend for Anonymous? What has the reaction been within that community?
I would really hope so. It's been encouraging to see the resurgence. It's been encouraging to see, you know, people wanting to do more. I would really hope that this does, you know, it's just been encouraging. And
right. And remember, wear a mask, everybody. Wear a mask.
Please.
Even if you're just browsing the internet, wear a mask.
Right.
Don't want to get a virus while you're browsing the internet.
On the internet, in the streets, or in the sheets. Wear a mask, everybody.
Anonymous active in Chile and Argentina doing taco leaks and gore leaks and, I mean, a whole bunch of other things. So it's not just Anonymous in the United States that has been active. I mean, Anonymous worldwide has also been active, which, again, super encouraging. And I don't think that Anonymous worldwide gets as much credit as they should for the work that they do. And everybody should go check out, you know.
One thing I'm excited about is thinking about what you're experiencing at DDoS with the Twitter ban and stuff. It reminds me of the economic blockade against WikiLeaks from years ago, right, in which Anonymous took action against the credit card companies. But one thing that's different about this is, like you said, that Anonymous is active in all these other leaks around the world, and it's different cliques of groups, it's different organizations, is that the whole leaking apparatus is now, it's decentralized. It's a lot of different actors. It's a lot of different people and responsible. You know what I mean? It's not a single, you know, WikiLeaks organization run by a cisgendered white man, you know? So it's encouraging. It's no longer just in the hands of just one organization that could have its faults, like WikiLeaks.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I like working with DDoS, it's run by queer people, it's run by trans people. I'm not saying that, you know, organizations run by queer and trans people can't have its faults, but, I mean, it's collectively run. You know, we're a bunch of queer and trans people, so that's one of the reasons that I super like working with the DDoS
or what.
I don't know if there's anything else we want. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jay.
Well, I'm just excited the fact that, you know, this, like, I forgot what I was going to say.
I don't know if there's anything more about Blue Leafs we want to say.
Wait,
but
there's one more thing that I do want to say about
DDoS,
because I think that you will find it hilariously funny. There was one release in Blue Leafs that says that hackers are using Kali Linux to hack things from prison. In prison. So, running it on, I guess the fucking...
Might be a PlayStation or something.
Yeah. so that was interesting.
That's funny. You're right. It's exciting to see, other platformers publishing leaks with greater analysis, carrying what everyone's hope for other organizations such as WikiLeaks was doing. So Julian Assange, who, is still under, who has actually just picked up another indictment about Anonymous.
It's a superseding indictment, so it kind of takes the place of the old one. But there were no new charges, just some new details written into the indictment.
Yeah, from what I read of the indictment, like you said, no new charges. They just it's kind of weird that they just enhanced what was already written with additional chat logs. And one thing is that they pretty much made it clear that Sabu was definitely more involved. Was probably testified at the grand jury. Basically, they're just trying to make Assange look like more of an active orchestrator of the leaks that are being made. They're trying to make it look like he was encouraging hacks and stuff like that, which of course is ironic because, as we previously discussed, Sabu, while acting as a FBI informant for the FBI, was of course soliciting and encouraging and facilitating all kinds of hacks worldwide. One other thing I want to say about it is that there was no chat logs from my system that they seized when they raided, which is basically what they're looking for. And of course, there's no statements from me or any charges added to the indictment because of me. So I did my part.
It's another important reason to continue to fucking make sure we never fucking talk to the feds or the pigs regarding anything. It's always better to stay silent and say the one magic word. Fuck you, pig. I mean, lawyer.
Lawyer.
I'll just read it. I'm sorry. I know this must be a confusing time for you. You want to end systemic racism, but you don't support the violent, riotous protesters, but they're also the ones leading the way to end systemic racism. It's confusing. You did everything you could to support the cause, from posting black squares on social media, checking in on your black friend and make sure to let them know that you're not racist. I know you're going through a really hard time with the Target burned down and you're worried about your boutique down the street because you saw some bricks on a pallet the other day. Please, just drop the outside agitator myth, because it's just erasing black agency in this multiracial uprising that is making the world a little less racist. I know you feel a lot of guilt right now, but you're still going to have to participate. You're just going to have to listen a little bit and follow from the most affected, okay? It's not all about you. It could be about you every other day, just not right now. But you owe the riotous liberals. We have rioters to thank for the civil rights. If it wasn't for the threat of violence, the show of revolutionary force, we wouldn't have the establishment shaking in their skin suits and chasing the movement offering piecemeal reforms for political clout. So you have rioters to thank for defunding the police. Just know that this isn't our end goal. It isn't really what we want. And it's not fair. You always get what you want. We're saying abolish the police, but you always gaslighting us and telling us we don't really mean that. And for the love of my lack of God, quit placing all your bets on electoral politics. Look, 2020 elections is going to be wearing a gas mask,
walking through a police barricade surrounded by mouth breathers. All just to give a vote to a mummy over a flaccid statue? No thanks. Our efforts are better put elsewhere. We can protect us. So, that's it.
Right on. That shit is funny. I think you need, like, one line at the very end, though, to kind of, like, conclude it, though.
Yeah, well, I don't know. What do you got?
I don't have it. I don't have it, though. I'm saying that it just needs one line.
Black Lives Matter, listen to black voices, and take black concerns seriously.
There it is.
You said it.
And since we just finished Pride Month, black trans people matter, black queer people matter, black trans women matter.
Sure do.
Absolutely. I will say this because right after the killing of George Floyd, there was a murder of a black trans man, Tony McDade. Black trans men matter as well.
Dave's name, Tony McDade.
Yeah, he was experiencing a mental health crisis, and he was murdered by the police. So, Tony McDade, rest in power.
So every day we're seeing more evidence of how bad the situation is with the police. Millions have taken to the streets despite COVID to fight a greater danger, the racist pigs. We're going to defund them. We're going to tear down the system of police and prisons and their flaccid statues, which create cycles of poverty and abuse and misery and continue the legacy in which they were founded, white supremacy. And we're going to replace it with something better. There's a huge wave right now for the abolitionist cause. And we're trying to change the way we think from the ground up about accountability and public safety and how we handle interpersonal conflict. And we're going to reckon with our society's obsession with punishment. We just don't need the pigs. They're more likely to bring conflict to the situation as we see every day. They escalate situations, oftentimes with deadly results, especially for black folk and other POC. And now, it seems like a moment where everything previously thought unimaginable is now becoming possible. Maybe we can actually abolish the police as the city council voted to do in Minneapolis. We have the rioters and the protesters to thank for that. New York just defunded the police by $1 billion. And we know every time we hear news like that, we're going to find all these politicians coming out of the woodworks and thinking of ways to prevent that from ever happening, to delaying it, to minimalizing it, to turning it into some reform bill that doesn't do anything but just suppresses the moment. But we're going to keep fighting. We're not leaving the streets. Keep the momentum going.
Honestly, I don't think we have anything else to say. We just kind of wrap it up right there, huh? Right, Brian, what those last words you said, Jay?
All right.
You've been listening to Godless Pirates. Check out the link.
This is Jason from Chicago. Quarantine.
This is Jeremy, locked down but not locked out.
This is Grace and a very, very sleepy and cuddly Mr. K.
Another world's possible.
Another world is possible.
Another world is possible.
Let's play Twin Trouble. You ready, Jeremy?
Okay, go ahead.
One, two, three.
Twin Trouble. You fucked it up.
Man,
fucked it up.
He
fucked
had
it up.
He had it.
Nah.